This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 17th of May, 2022. And as Peter and I were just discussing a moment ago, what looked like the first boring session in a while may have actually held quite a bit of information value, at least in the market internals. Or at least you could say it was a rather interesting day relative to what the headlines showed, which was a pretty back and forth boring session, slightly up on the day. But as we're emphasizing today, and as you can see in our Saxo equity theme baskets, the performance was very weak in some of the bubble stocks, the bubbliest of all, Tesla, with a very ugly day, which is interesting when you nominally have a day that saw a reasonably okay price action. Your take on this, Peter?
Yeah, as we discussed, John, I mean, and as you said, on the surface, it looked like a pretty boring session. We went a little bit lower. We closed just above the 4,000 level in the S&P 500. A lot of options and a lot of activity around that area, naturally. Also a big round number, so psychologically very important. But Tesla was down 6% and actually did worse than the than our bubble stocks basket. And to me, there's a couple of things yesterday. So one thing is you have Lloyd Blankfein talking about a recession, you know, whatever that is. But then you have Elon Musk as well talking about the U.S. probably already is in a recession. And I don't have a very high confidence in Musk's ability to predict anything on the economy like the rest of us. It's a very complex system. But the fact that he mentioned it, I think, tells you a little bit about the weakness and the pressure that is on Tesla and why he's suddenly getting cold feet. I think he is very much aware of the future he's looking into over the next 12 to 18 months. He's seeing a supply side and a supply side economics that is just they're horrible. For his company, and he's just devoted a fourth of his wealth. There is clearly an equity valuation repricing taking place, as you can see as well on slide three. So I think it speaks volume. And then my final point, John, on Tesla is that I also found it weird yesterday that Elon Musk has suddenly become so politically opinionated. I mean, I don't care whether you vote Republican or Democratic, but it's interesting to note that you have it's very rare for high flying CEOs and business leaders in the U.S. to talk so much about politics, and him being so vocal, I'm not sure it's positive for his business, but that maybe it's maybe just a personal view here, but I don't think it's good for business, to say the least.
Yeah, well, you could argue maybe his comment on recession could have something to do with the new orders that are ticking in May. We of course can't know that. But it was a very interesting set of developments. And that whole Twitter situation there, I don't know if you want to comment on that, but just as we sort of suspected yesterday, not that we're visionaries, I think this was good. There's a lot of chatter about this, but looking to potentially to revisit the deal at a different price, and that Twitter price just got absolutely reamed. I think it was an 8% or 9% drop on the day for Twitter. And then, along those lines, Twitter falling as much as it has, we've seen these amazing markdowns in the, especially the most speculative names. But even if you look under the surface of what were we at the worst, something like a 15% decline in the S&P, we've seen other companies down by huge amounts. But you've emphasized something in an interesting piece you put out yesterday on valuations that we're still rather elevated if you look at history.
Yeah, it came a little bit as a surprise to me because we have already written a couple of notes on this tier two and tier three layer of U.S. technology stocks. But if we looked at the Russell 1000 and we said, okay, what are the amount of companies that are trading at a valuation level of enterprise value to sales forward looking, so 12 month forward looking estimates on revenue. What companies are above 8 on this valuation metric? And we got 43 companies, so that's roughly a little bit more than 4% of the Russell 1000 universe. And as you can see on slide 3, I've plotted the 10-year time series on this, and we're not even back to pre-pandemic levels yet in terms of equity valuation for this group of stocks. And even if we get back to the pre-pandemic levels in that immediate period, that level would be twice as high at that rather long, stable period from around 2013-ish to the end of 2016. So I think we could fall even more from current levels. And the Nasdaq is down 26-27% from the highs. I wouldn't be surprised if we could take another leg down. And I think you would agree, John, when you look at it just from a chart perspective, not even looking at fundamentals, that things are still pretty heavy.
Yes, and we're actually mentioned in the headline on slide two. We're about halfway between support and resistance on the main stock average there, this S&P 500 future. So I would look at that 41 plus area you've seen there on the chart, the 21-day moving averages as a basic resistance level. And I don't know, something I noted, I looked over the VIX because I run this risk indicator model, and I'll talk about it later, that one of the ones areas of that is flashing red is the high yield spread space. And wondering why my model isn't showing more alarming levels of risk. And then I look over at the VIX, and it seems like you get the least bit of relief. Of course, we did see a pretty solid rally a couple of days ago or a couple of sessions ago on Friday, but it just pounds right back down into the zone and the range on just one day of relief. And even yesterday, it dropped very sharply, the volatility, and so the VIX. And it just suggests the market is not that concerned just yet. I think we mentioned that on a podcast where we mapped out the forward curve showing that actually market fear levels are not even that particularly bad of late. Let's jump over to you on commodities, because we need to bring in this food story. We had the Bank of England Governor Bailey out talking about, he used the word apocalyptic in describing the concerns on food price rises, especially for emerging markets, but also saying that this is affecting certainly the standard of living for lower income households, and even Deputy Governor Ramsden saying it is creeping into the median wage earner as well, these impacts on food and energy. Unfortunately, we don't have good news on the food front, but what's the latest here that you've got on your overview here on slide seven?
Yeah, well, it's just that we continue to see rises in food commodities. It's not just isolated in a few markets, but quite broadly right now. And behind all this is first of all the Russian aggression in Ukraine, which has cut off supply lines from Ukraine, a key exporter of wheat, corn, and sunflower oil. But in addition to that, we have weather worries around the world right now, impacting several key crops. We saw the wheat jump, which we talked about yesterday. That has led to an extended rally in rough rice prices trade in the U.S. Obviously, rice is primarily in Asia, but there is a contract in the U.S. which is also reflecting these price developments. We got a heat wave in southern states of the U.S. You probably know more about that, John. That's lifting cotton prices. And then in Brazil, we have a frost scare, which once again boosted coffee prices yesterday. Coffee is still in a downtrend since February, but if that frost scare really becomes a real event, then prices can clearly move quite a bit higher. At this moment in time, I think the market is just more worried because they're thinking about what happened last year in Brazil. The risk this time around seems to be smaller, but you can never rule out, and that's basically lifting prices. And if we're just finishing off the grain space, yesterday we had the weekly update from the USDA regarding the conditions and progress in the US market. And as we can see on slide eight, the wheat condition, the winter wheat condition, is pretty poor. Around 20%, 27% is rated good to excellent. That's down from around 48 in recent years. So that's clearly not adding to the yield and the production level. But at the same time, on a good note, corn and soybean planting pace is trailing, but it at least has been picking up speed during the last week.
All right, we have to hope for the best there. And then we were supposed to discuss it yesterday because it's getting pretty interesting on the industrial metals front. There's a lot of chatter about China and their potential intention to stimulate. I think we're a bit skeptical on that front for now. We do have some hopeful signs in Shanghai, but still some concerns in Beijing in terms of COVID lockdowns. There was also a tech, some kind of a symposium with a regulatory body and involved some key tech CEOs discussing something or other. I'm not even actually, I had to dive into the story that had Chinese tech prices on the high, but it just, Dr. Copper is saying right here that it does not have great hopes at the moment, at least for these Chinese, for this Chinese stimulus. I mean, yes, it's up a little bit for locally, but we're still at the bottom of the range. What's your take? I know you've emphasized the supply situation there.
Exactly, John, and I'm just highlighting it because it is the most industrial metals has been the most beaten down sector across the commodities during the past few months, based on the lockdowns in China, where the whole sector is down around 25%. So it's probably potentially also the sector that could see the strongest recovery if and when these lockdowns really start to be or the easing of the lockdown start to be felt, and the market turns their attention to the Chinese government and its efforts to bring the economy back to life. So just keep that in mind. And the reason why I wanted to highlight copper was just simply that last week we saw a doubling of the net short held by speculators in the market. So basically, if we should see an additional recovery from here, there will be some tailwind from funds basically having to get that position turned around, back around to a long again. So just keep that in mind. And in addition, if I just may add, during the last 2 months, while the commodity industrial metal prices have been coming down, copper prices have been falling quite steeply. The inventory levels at exchange monitored warehouse around world has not increased. So it's not the fact that it's not, you would imagine during if it was due to a slowdown in demand, stock levels would have risen and they really haven't. So if we do see a pickup in demand from here, then we still have global stocks at relatively low levels.
All right. And then I'll rewind a little bit further in the slide deck to slide 4, the FX market. So the dollar serving as the flip side of that volatility I mentioned and risk sentiment. So with it pretty stable coming into this morning, a little bit of extra juice overnight in Asia, we see the dollar quite weak here. It's going to be poking up into some key resistance levels in euro dollar, which is what I emphasize in slide 4, support levels with the dollar, 105. I think also just as interesting, we've seen the quite a lot of yen volatility really out of, beyond what should be happening in terms of the coinciding indicators, shifts in the yield, shifts in risk sentiment, perhaps one of the keys there. But whatever, that to me, the yen volatility in the cross is a bit odd here. I suspect maybe that move last Thursday might have been some positions that were in trouble and there was some forced liquidation going on. We've retraced a lot of that in the yen crosses. So the yen weakening quite aggressively here, but there's some key resistance levels coming up in those crosses as well. Nothing breaking just yet. We'll see how this pans out. I think to get a significant dollar sell-off here extending, you'll have to see a pretty robust recovery in global risk sentiment and some more upside in equities, et cetera. I think it's all the same thing. I think the dollar is global financial conditions, but worth noting these levels, the 0 spot 70.50 to 71 area in Australian dollar, for example, there was a bit of RBA noise overnight with the minutes, as they apparently considered three options for the rate hike at most recent meeting at the beginning of this month. They talked about 15 basis points, which would have raised the rate to a convenient round 0.25%. The actual 25 basis point hike they did, and they also considered 40 basis points. And the fact that they had considered the latter of the last of those was seen as a bit hawkish. Australian dollar, watch out for some volatility overnight. They're releasing the latest wage data, and this is. The wage data is what the RBA has pointed to as the key indicator for the pace of its and whether it needs to bring forward its tightening, et cetera. So that's important there. And then we have the Canadian dollar higher as we have these oil prices. Actually, brief note, just I'm gonna trouble you once again, Ola. Why? Maybe there's a contract difference that we've rolled to a new contract in Brent. Is that why I saw the WTI rising to the same level-ish as Brent?
Nope. Well, that's part of it, John. But the spread, as you say, rightfully say, has contracted quite a bit in the past few weeks, and it's simply a reflection of the fact that Brent crude is the global market, and that's being somewhat held back by the lockdowns in China, which has seen quite a significant drop in Chinese demand, whereas the U.S. demand remains extremely strong. Refineries are running close to full capacity because they are just churning out the refined products, which they're then shipping across the Atlantic to Europe, where we are struggling to get the supplies from. Well, we won't take delivery of supplies from Russia. So it is basically the U.S. story where robust domestic demand has driven gasoline prices to record highs, but also the very robust demand for both crude oil and refined products that is underpinning the price of WTI right now.
Okay. Cool. Now let's go to the stocks to watch today. We already jawboned a little bit on Tesla And we talked a little bit before, Peter, about that 700 level. It was broken intraday, but we closed back above on Friday. But as we noted, this divergent weakness yesterday is one to take note of. And you've talked about the whole triangle speculative complex of ARK, Tesla, Bitcoin, et cetera. By the way, Bitcoin still managing to trade above 30,000. It's been testing below at times. There was some other smaller stable coin that blew up yesterday. But you have to have these cryptos on your radar, especially I would say Tether is the most important of these besides the headline Bitcoin, et cetera. But where else are you looking in today's market?
Well, if you're based in the UK, Vodafone is typically a big company to watch. Their organic service revenue missed estimates slightly, and then they disappointed on their forecast for operating profits. So it could be interesting to watch if you are into those things. And you can imagine the Vodafone is one of the more defensive stocks that are doing quite well. We know what's called low volatility stocks, so that tends to be telecommunication stocks like Vodafone. They have done pretty well in the recent past. And then, of course, Chinese technology stocks, they were lifted in the session today because JP Morgan made a turnaround. So they very recently put out a big splashy piece and headline said that the Chinese technology stocks were basically uninvestable. And that caused miraculously them to lose a lead position in a major deal in China suddenly. And now they have come around. Of course, yeah, it doesn't take a PhD in logic to figure that out. But they have, of course, been forced behind the lines to do this. And I don't know whether that sell side analyst I'm being very harsh now, but I don't know how you can look yourself into the mirror. I mean, if you have any integrity and ethics. But this guy is being forced to now put out buy recommendations on several Chinese technology stocks. It lifted sentiment. We'll have to see whether it's enough to move the needle and move flow. And there's big discussions, as we talked about, about the reopening of Shanghai and other major cities in China. And as we talked about in our internal call, the pressure is still on the Chinese economy. There's very low vaccination rate among elderly people in China, and it is a very contagious version that they're dealing with. Being the Omicron. So let's see. I'm still negative on Chinese equities. I don't think they're cheap. I mean the common prosperity and all the signals that we're getting from the Chinese government is not in favor of shareholder value, to say the least. So to me, the big broad long term picture hasn't really changed. But I can be swayed the other way around if the technical picture, of course, changes, then I have to revise my prior. But my prior is still that Chinese technology stocks will continue to not do well in the future.
I think a geopolitical risk is a prominent long-term risk as well in terms of accounting rules, allocation, indices, all these things, and that could affect the outlook there as well, the status of international investors and the flows in and out of China. And we talked yesterday about Walmart and Home Depot, big retail names up today. We'll have to watch those results. And of course, interesting on a day where we're seeing the retail sales report out of the US, the latest one for April. How was that doing? I think the expectations running for, fairly okay, but they've been strong so far this year, but we have to remember they have to track quite aggressively higher because of the nominal inflation that is going on here. And this is not an inflation adjusted number. So that's worth noting as well. The first and some of the first and more leading housing indicators coming up with the NAHB market index today and the housing starts and building permits tomorrow. We're always watching those. By the way, the first of the regional manufacturing surveys out yesterday, the Empire Manufacturing Survey, was out at a staggering minus 11.6 versus plus 15 expected. It is a very volatile survey. There was 2 months prior. This is the most leading of the regional ones, and it's the one for May. So the March one also missed horribly before a huge bounce in April. So it is very volatile, but still just an ugly number there. We'll have to watch for any confirmation in some of the upcoming surveys like the Philly Fed on Thursday. By the way, shipments was down to minus 15.4 and new orders down to minus 8.8 in that Empire survey. So so quite an ugly one there. And then we had, that's the focus for today. Fed Chair Powell will be out speaking at an event. It's an interview, as far as I know, at a Wall Street Journal event. So, of course, any sort of update on his thoughts could see a pretty noted market response after a couple of days of dollar weakening. And I forgot to bring the gold discussion in. Ola, I think it actually is worth mentioning just because it was quite a dramatic candlestick and reversal bar. Sort of 2 days after, effectively, it sort of capitulated through all major local support levels. Any updates on your thoughts on gold here?
Well, only that, that is the technical observation, and technicals obviously do play quite an important part right now after that technical breakdown we saw last week, which attracted technical selling. So I think with that in mind, we probably need to just to focus on that 200-day moving average around that 1838 level. That's really the level we need to move back above in order to reduce some of the recent selling pressure. But I also keep an eye on the yield market development. We've seen growth downgrades in the US. Potentially that could signal a short-term peak in yields. That remains to be seen, but the real yields has been drifting lower. And as you can see, we've been in a perfect upward trending channel since early March. And if we start to break that, that could obviously signal a period of consolidation in real yields. And that I think that could be taken positive by the gold market. But for now, it's still just fair battling to rekindle or attract some friends again after having lost a few during the past few weeks.
Yeah, quite a drawdown there. And I actually mentioned at the top of the program the rise in corporate spreads. So I ought to just highlight on slide 6, if you want to have a look at that, the perspective on where we are with high yield spreads. They've moved pretty aggressively higher in the last couple of weeks here, above 450 basis points now. If we look back at late 2018, and a lot of times when these types of indicators go, they go quickly. That was the case in late 2018. It went from absolutely nothing going on in October to new highs above 500 basis points. That was right around the time when the market was falling badly and the Fed did its pivot. Of course, it's a little bit too early to expect that, but we have to watch for strain and stress in the corporate yield space as well as that indicator, if you will, is on the loose. So keep an eye on that and stay careful out there. And we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.